Hey guys, just want to let you know the Patreon is up. Check it out, patreon.com/Beer City Media Podcast for all your extra Beer City Media needs. Now on with the show.
Jim Jones, leader of the People's Temple, has come to symbolize the ultimate in sleazy, evil cult figures. Through a forceful personality, charm, and genuine good works, he managed to draw a massive following and lead them, like a modern-day Pied Piper, to the jungles of Guyana. There, he promised them a modern-day Garden of Eden. What they found was confinement, mental and physical control, and enforced suicide.
Welcome to the Conspiracy Therapy Podcast. Brian, Larry, Springhill, Josh, the Luma Mommy herself, Miss April. And welcome to your 200th episode, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Jonestown. Jupe Kitchen Studio for the 200th time.
Wow.
Here we are, guys. We did it. We fucking did it. Never thought it was going to happen.
No. Not in a fucking lifetime.
Yep.
But here we are. Our friendships have only been cultivated and made more personable and real. And here we are to talk about Jonestown.
Man.
Probably the best story we could ever cover for 200. I can't think of anything better to cover. For me, this is the Babe Ruth.
You're going to hear fireworks in the background, just so you guys know.
They're celebrating for us, too.
They are.
So truthfully, this is, if we were a baseball podcast, much like the Ephus, which you can get on our Patreon.
Indeed.
This would be the Babe Ruth.
This would.
For conspiracies, for me.
Okay.
Especially with us doing cults in season...
It's definitely the favorite of cults.
Yes. This is the bar none craziest story, and it goes places I can't even begin to explain to you. So let us pull the Thunderbird to the side of the road and get real. Now, we've talked about how scary cults are. But with this one, I got to ask you, do you think you would be swayed into this cult? And now three of us have done the research on this. So Larry's kind of on the outs, but let's give a brief explanation. This was a 1950s church at the time.
Already, I can tell you the answer.
That was all inclusive, though. You had blacks, whites, Asians, any proclivity when it comes to background. They were all part of the choir, they were all part of the congregation. So it made sense that this was the coming of like a new mindset. So do you think that at the time that you would have been like, hey, I could pay this church some attention?
Absolutely no. Zero out of ten. Would not be interested.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll go next. The idea of being an atheist is the best part is not going to any meetings
Yeah.
There's no place I have to go every once a week.
Right.
I think, considering the time frame and how progressive he was in terms of desegregation
before civil rights.
Yeah. Okay. And hearing him talk and reading some of the things that he preached and the way he brought ideas to the table, I think I would have been intrigued for sure.
Yeah.
I think I would have jumped ship as soon as it started to get weird.
Well, before Jonestown, we have a lot of time before mm-hmm. that happens. I mean, the People's Temple was a long-going mm-hmm. organization. Jonestown was really a reaction to him actually being treated from the media mm-hmm. and having to escape from that, and before he could get arrested, basically. Mm-hmm. The People's Temple in the 50s, I would have fallen for hook, line, and sinker. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had a great message. And it seemed there was a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'd paid attention, I would have noticed when he started substituting God for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's eventually what led to the downfall, I think. But yeah, so you're saying I'd be intrigued.
Mm-hmm.
Josh, no. Larry, no. Me and April probably would have shown up to a couple of sermons. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Hmm.
I mean, it's tricky because we're not. I mean,
this is depends on my age.
Yes, it does.
It also depends on your parents.
Right.
True.
I think, assuming that I am.
Sounds like popcorn now. The fireworks are going off so fast.
If I was to assume that I was of the same political standing that I am now, which is leans more left.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think if an idea, exactly, I think if an idea was presented that was left leaning and based on desegregation and this inclusivity, mm-hmm. I probably would have been drawn in by that. Sure. But yeah, like you had said, I think as soon as it started veering away from being about, you know, religion and God and more about Jim Jones, I would have been like, oh, this is starting to get weird.
It is. And, as April will elaborate about his early years, there was
shooty, shooty, bang, bang outside.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Yeah, I'm actually able to watch this full show where we're sitting.
He's got the best seat.
Yeah, right? Jeez. Yeah.
Anyway, this is the ultimate story of the darkness of man. For me,
mm-hmm.
usually these religious people use it to make money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was about that with them.
I don't think. I mean, what little I know about mm-hmm. this, that's what I'm saying. I'm kind of saying is it's kind of the opposite.
So you're saying he's no Olstein, huh?
Right, or any of those guys. What's the Benny Hinn? Is mm-hmm. another one.
Yeah. Yep.
No, Jim Jones was something else, and. This is a story I've been wanting to tell for the longest time. And now doing the research this last week, I don't think I've been more excited to tell a story than I am tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this actually has a lot of lessons to be learned. I think this, at the end of the day, as Marcus Parks put it on last podcast on the left, it ended up being a joke. Don't drink the Kool-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day,
and even that joke is bad because it wasn't Kool-Aid.
Indeed.
Yep.
Right.
I mean, at least
poor Kool-Aid.
They got dragged through the mud.
I know.
Oh no.
Well, what's funny about it too is that like Flavor Aid was the drink,
mm-hmm.
but they were like, "Fuck yes!"
Right, and they got
finally
no
some press,
and they got no publicity from it because everybody said, "Don't drink the Kool-Aid."
Mm-hmm. No.
I know, it's like everybody's
opportunity.
It's like Surge, and like somebody says, "Don't drink the Mountain Dew," and you're like, "But that was Surge." Good.
Mellow Yellows at the on the side of the road, kicking rocks.
Right,
that's a slide whistle player.
Yep. Dr. Pibb's trying to Get a little thrust from Dr. Pepper. Mr. Pibb. Right. Mr. Pibb's trying to earn his medical degree so he can become a doctor.
Dr. Thunder's still in preschool, though.
Dr. Right. Thunder is a doctor, but he's a chiropractor, so he's not really a doctor.
He's also a dentist. He's also on the spectrum, so things are a little weird. He's a
dentist.
Anyway.
He's a dentist that peddles sugary drinks.
Let's kick this off with the inception of Jim Jones, and April is going to head us off with this first segment.
I guess it's better than like the conceived, like Jim Jones conceived, like his mommy and his daddy had a ice cream sundae. It was a warm June evening in 1927.
All right, so we're going to start off talking a little bit about his early life, like how, oh, God almighty.
Did your neighborhood discover oil recently and the U.S. government has decided to liberate you?
Apparently, Jesus. I know, God, it sounds like we're in a war zone. Thank you for punctuating that, neighbors. So, James Warren Jones was born May 13 in 1931. In Crete, Indiana, to James Thurman Jones, who was a World War I veteran, and Lynetta Putnam. He was Welsh and Irish descent, although he liked to tell people that he had Cherokee ancestry, which was actually debunked by his maternal second cousin. She said he was basically full of shit.
Yeah, I mean, he was very early on a bullshit artist.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I am chief full of shit.
Yeah, pretty much. So, of course, being born in 31, that meant that his like early years were spent in the Great Depression.
Ooh, woof.
So his family moved to Lynn, Indiana, where he grew up in a house that didn't have any plumbing. Yeah.
Which is rough to begin with. I mean,
yeah, for sure.
I mean, they were also poor.
Oh, yeah. They were dirt poor.
I assumed that with the no plumbing.
And the Great Depression.
The Great Depression.
Everyone was poor.
That's some great deductive skills you've got there, Larry.
I am a super sleuth.
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Now, as a child and young adult, he was super into reading, which you would think would be like awesome. Like, I love when my 10-year-old reads. If my 10-year-old was reading the works of Stalin, Marx, Mao, Gandhi, and Hitler, I would maybe feel a little bit more uncomfortable.
I was like, wait, what?
Mein Kampf, which was the book, but also translates to My Struggle, by the way.
Yeah.
Was Hitler?
This is going to sound stupid. I should know this.
No, yet. Hitler's going to come up a lot here in this beginning part.
That wasn't my question at all. My question was Hitler left or right?
He would say he would have been left.
That's kind of...
He was for the working class, and he was a bit of a socialist, but it became fascism.
Okay.
Yep. So then again, this is...
Just so I have an idea what this guy is.
For sure.
It's definitely far left stuff.
Oh, yeah. Super, 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 super left. Very socialist. He loved learning about religion, which is, I guess, great.
He also saw the worth in becoming a pastor.
Oh, for sure. Early on. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a little bit. Kids who grew up with him referred to him as a really weird kid, which makes me feel better that I'm not the only one that got called that growing up.
Same here. This table is full of weird kids.
Yep, really weird kids.
Well, not Ryan.
Oh, no. He ran around in the forest. He ran around in the woods.
Ryan Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Get to the chopper.
We're all really weird.
We're all weirdos here.
So he was obsessed with religion and death. He held funerals for small animals that he found on his parents' property and even once stabbed a cat to death.
Just so he could have a funeral for it.
Now that's just ridiculous.
Juice. God damn it.
Here we lie, kibbles to... Does anybody have anything they want to say about Kibbles and his life?
Yes, I'm Jeffrey Dahmer.
Get out of here, Jeffrey Dahmer.
Kibbles was one of our favorite cats. We here now to lay him and intern him in peace. Kibbles liked Whip a little too much.
Damn.
As did Ryan.
It happens.
Nipples or nibbles?
Both.
Yes.
Josh is on fire tonight.
He is.
Makes my job easier.
Right? So, as a child, Jim Jones would play pretend, goose stepping around and acting out as the Fuhrer. And when older kids got creeped out, he just made little kids do it, like younger kids.
Such a weird term, goose stepping.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I think a lot of it, too, was the image of it. I mean, because if you think about Adolf Hitler, when you would come to see his movies when you were in a theater at the time, I mean, it looks so dramatic in the way the scale, the directors he had who would videotape him and his crowds. Yep. I can understand you
and
thinking
at that time too, by the way, like film was in its infancy at that point. And they figured out how to like use it as propaganda.
Indeed.
Yep.
As opposed to just bonking each other on the face with a hammer, fake hammers and doing all that weird Charlie Chaplin silent film shit.
Three Stooges. Yeah.
Yep. Well, Three Stooges were a little later.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
That was me. That was my little bubble, weird bubble in my throat. I was kind of hoping no one would notice that. But yeah, there it is.
Isolate that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that.
I'm just kidding, saving that one.
Congratulations. You've just heard as close as I come to burping.
I thought that was me. I was like, did that come out of me?
No, that was me.
Weird noises come out of me at this age. Yeah. There's just weird sounds. I hear
you. I'm there. Oh my God. So Jim Jones, he's a fucking weird kid. He had a habit of pointing guns at his friends and just smiling.
Okay.
So yeah, he's really on par with that soup that we like to talk about.
The serial killer soup.
Yeah, serial killer soup with just like weird behavior
from Campbell's.
And killing animals.
Very chunky.
Cream of soup serial killer is my favorite.
I like the low sodium version. I don't know.
You're watching your health.
Yeah, of course.
There.
I have high blood pressure. So Jim Jones' father was allegedly associated with the KKK. Obviously, it was super popular in Indiana during the Depression.
Still,
he was also he was also a drunk at the time.
Oh yeah, he was a shit bird. One of the dogs is trying to hump the cat. It's fine.
Poor cat.
Sound like a VCR that was like running backwards.
Yeah.
Someone's being kind and rewinding right now. I found this old Blockbuster VHS under my couch.
Oh my God.
Josh, did something creep out of your butt again?
No.
Okay. Just animals being weird and gunshots. This is a fuck, man.
Happy 200 episodes.
Yeah, right? They're having fireworks in our honor. So Jim actually spoke out against his father's beliefs. He was very oh my God.
I apologize.
Well, thank you, Mr. Bullfrog.
Yes. He actually went a bunch of years without speaking to his father because there was an incident where he wanted to invite a black friend of his to their home and his dad wouldn't let him in the door. So Jim was like, okay, well, fuck off, peace, and didn't talk to him for a really long time.
Which to me is actually commendable to Jim.
Oh, yeah.
Doing the research in this, there's a lot of things that he did that were super commendable. That like he was on the right track for a lot of things. Like, I don't know where we went sideways, but
well, I think a lot of the goose stepping and maybe
the killing of the animals,
the funerals, right. and appreciating death.
Yeah, true, fair enough. Oh boy. Okay, so his parents separated and he moved with his mom to Richmond, Indiana. He spends a lot of time in his young life moving from place to place.
Yeah, very but it's so. Indiana. So.
That's true. You're never going that far.
Okay, also, that's because they're trying to find something to do.
Yeah.
When they left, they disregarded their dad completely, like basically never talked to him again. Yep. And it's super sad because I think a father figure is super important to somebody Jim.
When that's your father figure.
He's an alcoholic and he's racist.
Yep.
Okay, bye, Dad.
I get it.
For sure. Now, he graduated from high school early and with honors in December of 1948. He was a smart cookie. Like, he knew what he was doing. He was a very, very smart man. He met a nurse named Marceline Baldwin over a corpse. Super romantic.
Yeah, they were both nurse assistants.
Orderlies.
Hey, orderlies. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hey, baby. I'm just as stiff as this
corpse here. Which is so telling because they meet over a corpse and then they... literally, when they end things, their corpses among children, mm-hmm. men, women, like that's their love story.
Yeah. Mm. Corpsey.
Like a South American country.
He would go on to marry her in 1949. They relocated again to Bloomington, Indiana. That's where he went to Indiana University, Bloomington, where he heard a speech made by Eleanor Roosevelt about the plight of African Americans and was mm-hmm. super blown away. So this is sort of the beginning of his work against racial segregation.
Okay.
1951, they relocated again to Indianapolis, this time where he went to Indiana University for 2 years and then took night classes at Butler University.
Butler.
He earned a degree in secondary education in 1961, which was actually 10 years after he enrolled.
So stupid.
Oh my God. Bunch of 12-year-old boys. Now, you'll like this.
I wish I could fart on command.
No. When he was in college, he stabbed his roommate while he slept on the top bunk.
Who does that?
Oh, wait. While he did it, he just hissed.
Like a snake.
That's what he did while he was stabbing his roommate.
That's how I is.
I'm just saying, this is another telltale sign you're...
Yeah. Although, I have to say, he might have been a little justified. The top bunk is better.
Okay.
Yes.
I'd be mad if someone got the top bunk, too.
Yes, because when you're on the bottom, when they're jerking it, you can feel it.
Yeah. Now, when he moved to Indianapolis, he started attending gatherings of the Communist Party USA. This was a big deal because this was right in the era of the McCarthy hearings.
Didn't Miley Cyrus do that song?
Communist Party in the USA. Yeah, I remember that one. Classic. But yeah, this was during the McCarthy era where they were trying to out all the American communists. So.
Oh, yeah. A future episode.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure.
Now both he and his mother were like majorly harassed. His mother actually was harassed by the FBI in front of her coworkers for attending a convention.
Really?
Yeah. After that, he was just obviously he was super frustrated. Like he was accused of Jesus, God. Mary and Joseph. Who? Yeah, it's just World War II here. It's fine. He was frustrated with the persecution of accused communists in the United States. There's more thunder to go with that lightning, especially the trial of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg. So it was that moment that Jones realized that the best way to demonstrate Marxism was to infiltrate the church.
Mm-hmm. Josh
just dropped a bomb.
Fart.
Jesus Christ.
What do you get? What do you think? I can't even.
Yeah. I can't think. You just gassed yourself.
Somebody sleeping on the couch tonight. It's not
shrimp
me.
And meatballs.
It's the one with the farts.
Shrimp, meatballs, and veggie dip. And yeah.
Oh my God. Fuck me. Yeah, that's. I'm.
That's tomorrow morning.
That's what I'm going to have to clean out of his underwear when I do laundry next.
I've had like 12 cups of. Yeah.
It's not going to be pretty.
Just be a big brown stripe on the couch where he was sleeping.
Okay. Like a shit slug.
Yep.
Green tea, man.
Oh my God. So moving forward, a local Methodist district superintendent actually helped him get a start in the church, knowing that he was a communist.
Okay.
And even Jim Jones was like super surprised that this guy gave him a break.
Wait, what?
Yeah. 1952, he became a student pastor at the Somerset Southside Methodist Church, but left soon after because the church leaders poo-pooed the idea of blacks joining the congregation.
Which was a big through line for him.
Right. Now, around this time, he witnessed a faith healing service at the Seventh-day Baptist Church. Mm-hmm. And was immediately interested in the number of people and the amount of money the event drew. This was the first time he kind of realized, he looked at these church sermons and thought, I could maybe make a living out of this. Like, I can scam people out of a lot of money by making some shit up. I know. God damn. We picked a doozy of a night to record this.
I hope these are picking up.
I'm sure they are, because they're picking up in my headphones. Sounds
stupid.
I know. You'll just have to add a bunch
to add a bunch of fake fireworks in the back. Yep. Pew, 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 pew.
I know they're loud and bright if I can see them.
I know. The reflection is...
Oh my God. So after he went and saw the faith healing, he actually went and organized an insanely huge religious convention that was June 11 through 15, 1956 in Cadle Tabernacle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I know what you're talking about.
So he knew that he needed a big name to draw a bunch of people. Yep. So he got Reverend William M. Branham.
That's a pretty big name.
It is a big name. Oh, it's a real lengthy one. Girthy, too. Reverend Branham was a healing evangelist and a religious author.
I'm gonna take the cancer from you. Just come up. Step up, sister.
But, yeah, I'll take the cancer. Take it away from you. Lay hands upon you.
Let me just put these right on your nipples. All right, radio dials.
Lions Church only cures breast cancer.
And cervical cancer.
With his penis.
With his penis.
I'm not saying I'm a reverend, but I might be holy.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. We'll expel those demons.
You think Jesus got nailed?
Come to Grand Rapids.
Wow. Okay. So after he held this big conference, he finally had enough money to start his own church. Right. So it had several names until they finally settled on this mouthful, which is the Peepers.
Peepers.
The Peepers.
It was only for window peepers.
And
only
marshmallow.
Marshmallow. And marshmallow chickens. And yep.
People with big eyeballs.
Yeah. Jeepers.
Creepers. Where'd you get them peepers?
No, he named it the People's Tabernacle Christian Church Full Gospel.
Nice.
Yes.
And henceforth, the church began.
Yes.
And their quest for the Holy Grail.
Now, it was notable that it was an interracial mission, which was hard to find back then, churches that accepted both whites and blacks.
Okay.
His idols were Hitler and Father Divine. That's a hell of a
style-wise with Hitler.
Yeah.
He liked the uniforms and the pomp and circumstance.
Yeah, he liked being real swanky. Yeah.
Ooh, can I get that? I like these suits. Can I get the medal for gassing Jews? Pomp and circumstance.
Hey, if anybody's gonna gas anybody, it's you,
it's
Josh.
It's true. Oh, Jesus. So, but anyway, he liked those particular men because they both taught him how to manipulate members of a cult. So that was their big sort of what he gleaned from them was the art of manipulation. Divine actually told Jones personally to, quote, find an enemy and to, quote, make sure they know who the enemy is. Is it will unify those in the group and make them subservient to him.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
And that's very telling because it's also a good way to manipulate your audience.
Yeah, for sure.
If you have an enemy, it immediately makes them more. It makes them more close to you.
Mm-hmm. To rally towards a cause of a single enemy. For
Jitties.
Sure. Now.
Jitties.
Yeah, well. In 1960, Indianapolis Mayor Charles Boswell actually appointed Jones as director of the local Human Rights Commission.
Which means right there, he's got ties to the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
Political ties.
Yeah. He ignored the mayor's advice on keeping a low profile and instead found outlets for more viewers on local radio and TV programs. This fucking pissed the mayor off because the mayor knew he was a commie.
Goddamn commie's doing a podcast now. She's 200 episodes in, too.
Now, Jones was actually wildly cheered at a meeting of the NAACP and Urban League when he yelled for his audience to be more militant and then shouted, "Let my people go."
Mm.
He spent a lot of time in working on racially integrating public places. The time that he worked in Indianapolis, he actually desegregated a bunch of churches, restaurants, the local telephone company, the police department, a theater, an amusement park, and the hospital.
See, this is all good.
Segregated hospitals?
Mm-hmm. Which actually,
This is insane. Because people complain about, with the racial things that are going on today, mm-hmm. you hear people argue the wrong side of mm-hmm. it. And those people probably lived through this. This is during my father's lifetime. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this was in the 1960s.
Yeah. Yep. And they're like, there's no problem. Like, it's within mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah. So.
Dude, I went through this the whole time I did the research on this.
It's insane how we think we've somehow mm-hmm. solved it within a few decades. Yeah. Like, we haven't.
Nope.
So. Swastikas were actually painted on the homes of two black families, and Jones walked through the neighborhood comforting local black people and counseling white families, trying to get them not to move.
Okay. He was a pro Hitler.
He was.
An image. It's different. It's really,
it wasn't his message. It was the imagery.
It was the imagery.
Right. Not the message.
He was pro Hitler in the idea. Like he liked
the way that he
rallied people up.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yep. He wanted to be a leader Hitler was, not necessarily agreeing with the ideals.
If you take the whole killing people thing away.
Right.
Well, it kind of, it's the episode two, but
I got you there. Okay. But I'm saying, if you just look at Hitler as the type of speaker he was and how to get a message across. Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, for sure. He was very effective.
Incredible cadence. And that was a big deal to a lot of, mm-hmm. there's serial killers we'll cover in the future and even in the past who actually had an affinity to Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
No surprise.
Yep. Right.
Now, Jones set up actual sting operations to catch restaurants refusing to serve black customers.
Mm-hmm. And I think I know you're going with this, but basically, mm-hmm. like, I know I read one story and I don't want to step in your toes mm-hmm. here, but basically he walked in and he would talk to the restaurant owner and say, mm-hmm. me and my friends are going to come here. Are you okay with it? And they would be like, well, if it's black individuals, whatever, but he would look at them and say, this place is desegregated and I'm literally going to fill your restaurant up. And he would do that
mm-hmm.
on a 3 p.m. on a day where mm-hmm. they would normally not even be full and fill it to capacity
mm-hmm.
and everybody would be ordering food and tipping and their business would be given money. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It was like he would teach.
He's basically saying the only color that matters is green.
Yeah,
exactly.
Pretty much. Yep.
Josh, did your ass just fall apart?
Not this very second.
Okay. I thought I heard something.
Oh my God. Oh. Now this is another interesting, story of his good work. He was accidentally placed in the black ward of a local hospital after a collapse in 1961, but refused to be moved. Instead, he started to make the beds and empty the bedpans of black patients. Now, because of this particular incident, there was so much political pressure that those actions caused hospital officials to desegregate the wards. So because of Jim Jones being put in a black ward, mm-hmm. eventually they just desegregated the wards, mm-hmm. which I think is great.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
It was really hard in doing all of this research to not like him. I mean, a lot of the stuff that he did early on was really good.
This is exactly what I wanted to happen on this mm-hmm. episode, because mm-hmm. it's the Joker movie,
mm-hmm.
but with a real story. This is your guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's the story of Two-Face.
Oh, for sure.
Exactly.
And he starts off as seemingly...
The White Knight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got some great things that he's trying to do for the city and whatnot, but then along the way, something snaps.
Yeah.
Human beings are complex.
Mm-hmm.
It's called...
not black. It's not white. It's those gray mm-hmm. areas in between.
Now, that being said, people in Indiana fucking hated him for all his integrationalist
perspectives. Good things he was doing.
Exactly. White-owned businesses and locals were super critical. And eventually a swastika was placed on the temple. A stick of dynamite was left in a temple coal pile, and a dead cat was thrown at his house after getting a threatening phone call, which I can only assume the cat got a funeral too. Just like that was his thing, right?
Tickles me.
R.I.P. Mitzi the cat.
Mitzi, thank you for your snuggles in the night.
Rest in pussy.
We did not know ye, as ye were, alas, yeeted at my front door.
Cat's not dying. What's going on?
So, it might still be old. Oh, never, never mind.
Nope. Never mind. We're good. Thanks. Thanks, Jim.
Took care of the cat problem.
God damn.
Juice, get out of here.
So, moving forward, this is another thing that I thought was really interesting. Jim Jones called it his rainbow family.
Yep.
He and his wife adopted several non-white children, referring to their household as his rainbow family.
Which is beautiful.
Yeah.
When you see it, it's like, fuck, I wish this guy wouldn't have been a piece of shit.
He said, quote, integration is a more personal thing with me now. It's a question of my son's future.
Mm. And we're talking pre-civil rights.
This was in early 1950s. 1954, he and his wife adopted Agnes, who was part Native American. And then they would go on to adopt three Korean-American children named Lou, Stephanie, and Suzanne in 1959. He encouraged temple members to adopt orphans from war-torn Korea. And he was also critical of U.S. opposition to communist leader Kim Il-sung and his 1950 invasion of South Korea, calling it, quote, a war of liberation, and stating that South Korea is a living example of all that socialism in the North has overcome. In June of 1959, the couple had their only biological child, naming him Stephen Gandhi.
Oh,
it was the, sorry. It was the...
We have yet to cover Gandhi churches that certain churches that became cults that Children of God is the church I'm thinking of.
We did and, Scientology.
We did. Ricky was a martyr / victim who could have enacted some serious revenge. And I think Stephen is the one.
Yeah.
I think Stephen could have been, I think Stephen, he survived it, but I think that if it had kept going, if it hadn't ended the way it would have, he would have enacted revenge on his dad.
Mm-hmm.
Like I watched. Revenge. Well, yeah. I watched a documentary on him, man, and he goes to Guyana and he's there where the church was, and he just sobs.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine? Your dad's Jim fucking Jones.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I mean, we're talking about all the good things, but like imagine being his son this time.
Yeah.
Like you said, he was raised through this and then coming out the other side and realizing how
I just wait till episode 2.
Yeah, shit.
Oh, I know. And Stephen is going to come up again. And this is one of the things that made me cry during the research for this, is this character, like this kid, I honest to God feel so bad for. But anyway, I apologize for being a puck wedgie.
No, it's fine.
What was that? Quonk. All right, continue.
So in 1961, they actually became the first white couple in Indiana to adopt a black child. They adopted a white son also, who was originally named Timothy Glenn Tupper, whose birth mother was a member of the temple. Now, at this time, they decided to take a little trip. The rainbow family traveled to Belo Horizonte, Brazil. Because they wanted to set up a new temple location. This was after preaching about the fears of a nuclear holocaust. And Jim had read an article in the January 62 issue of Esquire that listed that city specifically as a safe place in a nuclear war. I don't know who would know about that or like why they picked that place. But apparently it was safe. So On his way to Brazil, he made his first trip to Guyana, which was a British colony at the time. So in Belo Horizonte, they rented a 3-bedroom house. He studied the local economy and the receptiveness of racial minorities to his message. Obviously, language was a barrier. They had to sort of figure out a way around that.
Right.
But he also spent a lot of time learning about Brazilian syncretistic religions. So it was another sort of foray for him into learning about different religions and how he could use that. While he was there, he was very careful to not come off as communist. He wanted to be more of a neutral party as far as politics go. He's talked about an apostolic communal lifestyle rather than of communism leaders like Castro and Marx. Mm-hmm. So after their time in Belo Horizonte, they moved to Rio de Janeiro in 63 because there were not enough resources in Belo Horizonte. And then they worked with the poor in the slums. Again, like he worked with poor people. Like
if he would have died from a falling cinder block at this point, he would have been considered like a sage. Yeah.
He would have been Mother Teresa.
Yeah. Great guy.
Yeah, right. He was super plagued by guilt during this time for leaving Indiana during the civil rights movement. He had spent so much time.
Yeah, again, another reason to like him. Mm-hmm.
He spent so much time building, you know, this infrastructure of desegregation and then just kind of bolted right in the middle of it.
Right.
So he felt really compelled to move back to the United States.
And it was a precursor to that.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be like us like constantly talking. Yeah, they should have gay rights. They should have, you know, lesbians and gays should be able to marry. Mm-hmm. And then
like, they should be able to make their own porns.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not that I've never watched it.
Well, seriously, like imagining
ScissorSisters.com.
Imagine championing so hard for, you know, for the rights of a certain group of people. And then like, right as it was starting to get serious, being like, well, I'm out of here. Peace. Bye.
Right. I'm in Rio de Janeiro.
Yeah. Sipping mocktails. It was also at this time that one of his associate preachers in Indiana told him the temple was fucking needed some help. So he came back.
Hello.
The kitty.
I smell meatballs. So he returned with his rainbow family to California in December of 63 and just told his Indiana congregation to pack it up and head on over to California. He used the excuse that he knew that the world would be engulfed in nuclear war on July 15 of 67. And he said Northern California was safe. So that's where they moved the temple.
Okay.
Well, that was a big deal for him. I think, and it'll come up later when I talk about it, but basically he used the idea of nuclear warfare to make them move.
Oh yeah,
it was,
for sure.
It was a tactic. I mean, honestly, if you're,
oh my God,
if your preacher walks in,
Ken just licking straight out of the cream cheese dip.
Yep. That's right. Fine.
Put a cover on that.
Yeah.
If somebody that you trust that you listen to weekly walks up, or if say you're an InfoWars guy and Alex Jones walks out and goes, oh, by the way, there's warheads everywhere and I'm going to set them to go off because that'll teach the government.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe not.
So. Bear with me. We're almost there.
You're doing great,
Bear.
All right. So Jim Jones talked about the social gospel's virtues, but didn't reveal until later that his gospel was actually just communism. Like, he basically used religion to trick people into communism. He started partially by revealing the details of apostolic socialism, which was basically socialism was enlightenment. If you're born in capitalist America, you're born into sin. And if you're born into socialism, you're born in not sin.
Okay.
But
sin is a choice. It's not supposed to be a thing you're born into.
Not according to him.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah. This is where it starts getting a little. Okay, sure. So by the 70s, he began calling Christianity a flyaway religion, rejecting the Bible as being a tool to oppress women and non-whites. And he spent a lot of time denouncing the sky god. That's what he referred to him as.
The magic sky wizard.
Yep.
Well,
desert wizard.
He replaced God with himself.
Right.
Slowly.
Yep. He wrote a booklet called The Letter Killeth, which criticized the King James Bible. And then he went on to preach that he was the reincarnation of Gandhi, Father Divine, Gautama Buddha, Vladimir Lenin, and Jesus Christ himself.
Yeah.
So you can tell this is where he's starting to get a bigger head.
He's getting a little ego here.
Yeah, well, for sure.
Congregation was packed, and they were always so in tune. I mean, it's, we're talking like Baptist church.
He's playing to a sold-out crowd every night.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And he was a very, he was...
Good with words.
Very good with words.
He wasn't a slurry drunk guy trying to host a podcast.
Exactly.
He was more like the sidekick who was funny.
Right.
Yeah.
He said, quote, "What you need to believe in is what you can see. If you see me as your friend, I'll be your friend. If you see me as your father, I'll be your father for those of you who don't have a father. If you see me as your savior, I'll be your savior. If you see me as your God, I'll be your God.
I'll be your father figure."
Such a...
That's good. That's
a poignant line in his story, because I remember listening to him say that in one of the docs I watched and just being like, this is how he constructed the monster he became.
Yeah, and it was super convincing, and he was so well-spoken for someone who was an atheist, who is a confessed atheist.
And I mean, truthfully...
That's crazy!
He looks like Kurt Russell, or like... I mean, he's got a...
He's attractive as well.
He's attractive.
He's got like a Tom Jones vibe.
Very Tom Jones, I would say.
He's got big dig energy.
Oh, big time.
I'm saying this right now. Ari Aster, the director of Hereditary and Midsommar, makes a movie about this. Jake Gyllenhaal plays the lead.
Ooh, yeah.
And Amy Adams plays his wife.
I'm in.
Yep. And I'll cast everybody else later, but I'm just giving the idea.
Right.
Stay tuned, and we'll have the other 87 people are in the movie.
The other 918 people who die.
Choir member 6.
Yeah.
Listen.
So he... While they were in California, he used religion to try to get people out of religion. He was really focused on trying to get people away from Christianity and to join the people's tabernacle.
It was the socialist church.
Right. Mm. Because really what he was preaching had nothing to do with religion. It was just socialism with exactly. So in one sermon, he actually said, quote, "You're going to help yourself or you'll get no help. There's only one hope of glory. That's within you. Nobody's going to come out of the sky. There's no heaven up there. We'll have to make heaven down here."
Mm. Yep. Those would be great lyrics to a song, too, by the way.
Yeah, I heard Trent Reznor the whole time she was saying that.
I'm pretty sure Brandi Carlile talked about heaven being on earth.
Yeah.
True.
So,
thanks, Josh.
Check and bait.
Yes, exactly.
Atheist. Checkmate, atheist.
That's right. Oh, my God. So, within 5 years of moving to California, the temple experienced a crap ton of growth. Like, obviously, they put it in California, and it's super heavily populated. And with his message getting out, exactly. They wound up opening branches in San Fernando, San Francisco, and Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
Yeah, by the early 70s, he shifted from his original Indiana group to these big locations because they brought in more money.
It's crazy.
Yep. He actually went and moved the temple's headquarters to San Francisco, which was a huge center for radical protest movements. He
totally radical.
Radical, man.
Audacious. Extreme.
He and the temple became super influential in San Francisco politics and played a huge role in George Moscone.
Yep.
Mayoral victory enough. In 1975.
Mm. So again, more political.
He sort of
was kind of his
start?
Yeah, well, he sort of weasels his way into politics.
Because he has the mayor. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he understands the importance.
Exactly. Yeah. So the mayor actually appointed Jim Jones as the chairman of the San Francisco Housing Authority Commission. So now this is the second time he's been appointed by a mayor
to a position. To a
political position.
But this mayor is probably going to be a little more receptive.
Yeah.
You're not.
He was more popular at that time than he was originally.
Well, this is a more liberal
area
as well.
So now, as the chairman, he was able to connect with tons of prominent politicians at the local and national level. This is crazy. He met privately with vice president candidate Walter Mondale on his campaign plane days before the 76 elections.
Wow.
Which led Mondale to publicly praise the temple. Which was huge.
That is some press right there. Yeah,
for real. Now, even better, First Lady Rosalynn Carter also met with Jones on multiple occasions, wrote to him about Cuba, and spoke with him at the grand opening of the San Francisco headquarters, where he got louder applause than she did.
That's crazy.
True. Yeah.
Hey, Mike Pence, you want to plug a podcast for him?
We may not agree with you, but hey,
plug away.
Yeah, right.
It'll be the first thing I've actually seen him do. But.
Yeah, right. So September of 76, there was a testimonial dinner for Jones, which was attended by Governor Jerry Brown and Lieutenant Governor Mervyn Dimley.
Not Lieutenant Dan.
No, sorry. Now, during one of his speeches, Brown said Jones was, quote, what you should see every day when you look in the mirror. And called him a combination of Martin Luther King Jr., Angela Davis, Albert Einstein, and Mao Tse-Tung. And
the French Satan.
Harvey Milk, who
very famous.
Yes, Harvey Milk, who was famous for being the first.
I am French Satan.
who's this other guy you're talking about?
Harvey Milk.
Oh, he's the first one to put milk in a cereal.
No, he was assassin. He was the first openly gay mayor.
He was
a mayor who was assassinated,
which is sad as shit.
It is.
I'm trying to remember who played him. Harvey Milk.
Sean Penn.
Yep.
Harvey Milk actually frequented the temple a lot. Yep.
Oh wow. And so did Jane Fonda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And wrote to Jones after one of his. Harvey Milk wrote to Jones after one of his visits to the temple, quote, Reverend Jim, it may take me many a day to come back down from the high that I reached today. I found something dear today. I found a sense of being that makes up for all the hours and energy placed in a fight. I found what you wanted me to find. I shall be back, for I can never leave.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, if this first episode does anything, I hope that it explains to you how intense this point was, how much fervor he brought into people's lives.
Yep.
How he knew how to manipulate that position, that Joel Osteen or that religious pastor position, but also change the wording just a little bit to get what he wanted.
His charisma.
Yeah.
His charisma is insane. Dude, I watched videos of him preaching in the 60s before I came here. Dude, I was swayed. I get it. And when I look at a choir of kids saying all are welcome, and it's Asians, blacks, whites, all over the map, like Hispanics, I buy it. Hook, line, sinker.
And he was a very accessible person, too. Oh, yeah. Like he was able to speak to all, you know, pay levels. He was, you know, all races. He was able to find something in common with all of them that made everyone feel comfortable around him. My cat's so dumb.
She just clocked herself in the jaw on the table.
Yeah. Okay, she was asking for that.
Well, I want to kind of extrapolate on that. Every recording and every interview that I saw about Jim Jones said that Jones had the cone of attention, which is very prominent, say, in somebody like Bill Clinton. He could always remember names. He could always make you feel like you were the only person in the room, and he could listen to every
blowing me.
Well, hey, me too.
Yep.
I got the cone of attention for that as well. But I'm just saying, Jones had that.
I call it the cock of attention.
Standing at attention.
It's always right. Standing at attention.
I call this the Arkansas hard on.
All right, anyway. Oh, sorry, April.
So, Jones opened his apartment to local political figures. At this time, he was doing a lot of work with local media, too. Mm-hmm. A lot of newspapers. He spoke to San Francisco Sun reporter, publisher Carlton Goodlett about his remorse over not being able to travel to socialist countries and even speculated he could be a chief dairyman of the USSR. I don't know what a chief dairyman is.
I'm the president of milking things.
But I would assume that it has something to do with like cows or I don't know. It's
well,
just,
you're in trouble if you're lactose intolerant, sure. But
this is general grade cheese.
Yeah, they call me Mozzarella Matt. I'm here to do the
Mozzarella.
Really, I'm Cheddar
Chase. Chad.
Cheddar Chase. Son of Chevy Chase.
I'm Asiago Aaron.
Blue Cheese Bill.
Linda Limburger.
Don't go by her. She's a.
I'm Feta Fred.
Sally, I like you.
Sally Swiss.
Pepper Jack Pete. You think it'd be Pepper Jack Jack, but it's not. It's Pepper Jack Pete.
Hey, I'm Gouda Greg. I'm Mozzarella Michael.
All right, great segment.
Mm-hmm. Oh, provolone patty. Anyway.
Ricotta, ricotta.
Oh, God, this is where we are. Oh, my God.
Cheese crisp.
Hey, Mozzarella Matt, don't go by Chris. He's got a long gaze.
Creamy.
But we love him anyway.
I'm a Parmesan Pietro. Oh,
well,
boy.
I'm Pimento.
Pat.
Prattley. I'm Pimento Prattley down here in the South. You know, we like pimento cheese down here in South Carolina. Whatnot. It's all kind of spicy and whatnot.
I'm your brother, but I'm just saying, I love your show, Prattley Knows Best.
Prattley Knows Best is better than that Chrisley Knows Worse or whatever it is that we watch down here in the South.
I'm Dick Cheese Donald.
Dick Cheese Cheney?
Here we go.
All right.
Enough cheese jokes.
Let's let April finish her too. Cheesy.
Hey-o.
So we can take a fucking break.
I gotta pee
yes.
So bad.
Okay. No. I have like three sentences left. I promise we're getting there. So at this time, he forged a bunch of alliances with key columnists to sort of have an influence on the media. Although the move to San Francisco brought increasing media scrutiny, So while he was making some friends in the media, most of the media hated him. San Francisco Chronicle reporter Marshall Kilduff published an expose in New West Magazine after encountering resistance to publishing in the Chronicle. So he wanted to publish this expose piece in the Chronicle, but the Chronicle had friends in high places with Jim Jones, and they didn't want to publish something that was going to make him look bad.
Well, when you have the first lady on your side.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, in the summer of 1977, Jones and a few hundred of his closest temple members abruptly decided to move the temple's compound to Guyana after they learned that the contents of the article included allegations by former temple members that they were physically, emotionally, and sexually abused.
And that's what I'm going to get into after the break.
It was during the summer of 1973 that Jones made the decision to relocate the People's Temple to the South American country of Guyana. 2 months later, he visited the country in order to open negotiations to purchase 27,000 acres of land in the Matthew Ridge area near the Venezuelan border. The Guyanese Cooperative Republic was a socialist country, and for Jones, who had passed through on his return trip from Brazil in 1963, it was an ideal haven. The first People's Temple members arrived in Guyana in March of 1974, to begin the mammoth task of clearing the jungle and breaking grounds for construction on what was to become Jonestown. A year later, there were 50 People's Temple pioneers in Guyana. Day and night, they worked to construct buildings and establish a massive agricultural project. By 1977, Jonestown was an established community.
Back in the Shoop Kitchen studio.
That might be the greatest thing I've ever heard.
Oh my god.
We're gonna get real.
I can't recover from that. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ. Jesus
Christ. All right, so.
Hey.
It's 11.
Do you need a tissue in case so you cry from laughing too hard? I'm gonna fart.
Well, here we are. It's my turn. So I get to talk about what April just talked about, but in a more illuminating way, because April did kind of spell it out, and she did a phenomenal job. She's one of my favorite people to have on the show. Thank you for being here.
Of course. I mean, why stop now?
Never stop. Never stop having April.
Don't stop. Can't stop.
So Jim Jones, after marrying Marceline Jones, admitted he was actually an atheist. True story.
Mm-hmm.
And that the reason he was in church was because of socialism and that he wanted to show people how to be like him. Interesting.
I mean, if you're going to try and convince someone to do something, I feel like religion is an easy way to manipulate people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It can be used that way for sure. We've seen it. I mean, it still goes on today with your Joel Osteen, Benny Hinn's, and
Donald Trump's.
Not so much with religion.
Well, I mean, it's playing a group of people, though.
Yeah, fair enough.
Remember, this is a guy that said I could run as a Republican and
I could go out into whatever street and shoot
people. Avenue.
Yeah. Shoot someone and they'll still vote for me.
So she, after began to think about divorce, but because it was the 1950s, her mom talked her out of it. Which is sad because if she had actually stopped it, the future stopped that, it's possible this would never have happened. Mm-hmm. Her mom was like, no. He didn't take a soft bullet from the Civil War. You need to marry that man. He's got a full head of hair.
Well, this is also the 1950s?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Divorce, that's, I'm sure, just heavily frowned upon, too.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So, as I said, she was hoping for a divorce, but it wasn't going to happen because at the time that was too taboo. But there was a storm coming.
Boom.
She instead became the woman behind the man, which is, I mean, that's the thing. When you have somebody who is so endowed to the idea, 9 times out of 10, it's not a solo effort. There's always a woman behind that who's literally pushing, like, we can grow this service, Father. We can make people more attuned to our message.
Well, yeah, isn't the quote, behind every great man is an even greater woman?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
In my case.
Aww.
It's not true in my case.
Behind every great rad dad is an even greater hand.
Pocket pussy.
Wow. So they started a church called Community Unity. No joke. It was called Community Unity.
Community Unity.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I would say.
It's better than what I would name a church.
And word of mouth spread as he was a healer and talked about racial equality. He also said, he also sold monkeys on the side.
Wait, what now? Monkeys for sale.
He would sell monkeys. No joke. Jim Jones would do that.
I want a monkey.
Monkey King.
How did he do the healing? Like most flim-flam artists, he'd listen to his audience, especially when they complained about illness or troubles and woes. So he would go out into the audience and just like listen for what people... my butt hurts. I've got weird butt issues. He's like, all right, mental note. That guy...
Take out the Final Fantasy anal beads first. Mm-hmm. Try that on for size.
Or he would be like, this girl's like, my gigantic boobs hurt. They're always bip-bopping around when I just want to make titties. French toast.
Titties.
I hate when my titties bip-bop around.
I love when they bip-bop around.
So he would listen to them complain. Then he'd have plants in the audience. Mm-hmm.
Just a palm tree? Just
no, to people he would... Okay, people he would set out there. And when someone was chosen, he'd say, for example, you have cancer! Which is sad. Yeah. And then have them sent to the toilet to crap it out. This is no joke. Then bringing the doo-doo back out and saying they'd released it.
What?
In all honesty, though, it was chicken entrails.
Oh, so literally, my God.
They would go take a shit, or maybe it was like a minor fart, but somebody else would come out with chicken entrails to kind of be like, this is the cancer. She just shit this, or he just shit this out. No joke. This is what they would do. As the miracles and word of mouth grew, he needed to get a place of worship after being on the road, which they did for a very long time, which led them in 1956 to get a place of Jewish worship, which is what it was before. It was a Jewish temple.
Mm-hmm.
The place had temple on it, had the word temple on it. And since he had a socialist bent, he named it the People's Temple. But he was not Jewish.
Oh.
So as he went through the 60s and his congregation grew, he had an inside crew or the inside council or the people that basically he listened to. He would lay on a couch. Okay. No one could have a chair. And he would just talk. And he would tell them what they needed to do. Mm-hmm. And this is pre-amphetamines. Like, he would just literally just be like, okay, this is what we got to do. And then, by the way, where's your cute sister? Is she going to come to a congregation? I'll get into that soon. So, again, he had his inside crew. One of them was Patty Clayton. And she was his fuck planner because due to his wife, Marceline's bad back, he needed other women to spread the powers of their heroic leader.
Spread the powers.
Heroic deeds. And he wasn't just sleeping with women. He also slept with men. Which is not a bad thing. I'm saying if he could have been a little more open about his sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
As he was all-inclusive about people being his congregation, maybe he'd be a little bit more... This part wouldn't be so National Enquirer, but it kind of comes out that way. So, in fact, they were encouraged, according to the older members, they would encourage the younger members to douche themselves because Father did not appreciate shit on his dick.
Okay, what? It's like you quoted my experiences in Catholic school.
So these younger Ken doll looking guys were told to douche because Jim Jones would get mad if you got shit on his penis.
I'm sorry, if you're gonna drive down the dirt road, you gotta expect a little mud.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way,
if you're going into the foxhole, you might get some mud on the helmet.
This church was anti-homosexual. Meanwhile he was having intercourse with men's anuses, but also being like, yeah, but even though you're gay, you can't have a couple here in the People's Temple, which to me is bullshit. He was so on the money when it came to people being desegregated, but when it came to sexual preferences, he was a douche. And so I don't appreciate the people that.
They were douche too.
Indeed.
An eye for an eye, a douche for a douche.
They had two douches inside them that day.
Well, I mean, truthfully, this is pretty much on par with churches at the time. And then came amphetamines.
Oh, snap.
Right around 1970, it was the secret ingredient to the end, basically. I mean, this is what adds up to Jim wearing sunglasses.
This messed him up.
I mean, truthfully, if you watch earlier things with him, he doesn't have sunglasses on in a church, which you shouldn't even need those on. But he was trying to hide his addiction. In 1970, this is when he's like, shit, my fucking pupils are all over the place. There's shit on my dick.
Am I wearing my sunglasses even at night? I don't think I should. Yeah, it's some strong water I got there.
As I said, he sold monkeys.
Oh.
And I feel like it's super important for me to talk about his
butt. His monkey butt? Uh-oh, excellent. They're the Fry Guys.
J. Fred Muggs, born March 14th, 1952, is a chimpanzee born in the African colony of French Cameroon that forms part of modern-day Cameroon, brought to New York City. Before his first birthday, he was bought by two former NBC pages and eventually appeared on a host of television shows on that network, including NBC's Today Show, where he served as mascot.
What was the TV show? Something in the Bear.
Smokey.
It wasn't Smokey. No, Smokey the Bear was a whole other thing. Something in the Bear, and it was a truck driver with a chimpanzee.
I don't remember that, but I remember hearing about it. Oh, God.
What was the show with a chimpanzee and a truck driver?
Sorry, I can only search by topic for movies.
Siri sucks. Because
BJ and the Bear.
BJ and the Bear. Boy, that's a poorly named television show.
Yeah, right.
Just let me extrapolate.
Who'd give a BJ to a bear? That's a brave motherfucker right there.
I guess a guy that likes bears, but we're not.
I guess that's a second meaning I didn't think of. I was thinking a real bear.
BJ and the Bear is just the title of a gay porn.
Yeah.
Jim Jones had a history with monkeys. In the early days of People's Temple, he raised money by importing spider monkeys from South America to Indiana and sold them door to door as pets for $29.
What?
A spider monkey for sale.
During these sales,
can I get you into an entry level spider monkey?
He invited potential buyers to his church and gained many followers along the way because of the monkeys. People's Temple eventually made enough money that it was no longer necessary to sell monkeys, but the animal remained a significant part in Jones' life. In 1973, Jones found an 18-month-old chimpanzee and named him Mr. Muggs.
Sorry, but we've got a bunch of leftover monkeys. What should we do with them?
See episode 2.
Fuck.
Oh, no.
Could have been the Monkey King.
No.
Popular rock band that imitated the Beatles.
I talked about J. Fred Muggs just a second ago.
Monkey.
Mr. Muggs was named after the famous television chimp J. Fred Muggs.
Oh.
The church leader claimed to have rescued Mr. Muggs from scientific testing, but Jeff Gein's book, The Road to Jonestown, which is a big reference for this, I listened to that on audiobooks, produced evidence that Jones actually bought him from a pet store. Later that year, Mr. Muggs was eventually transferred down to Guyana. He was one of the first people who lived in Jonestown.
Hmm. The monkey was.
Yeah. Because people loved him.
He was a charter member.
He was, but
part of the HOA.
Yeah.
The founding president of the HOA of Ghana. Mr. Muggs.
Yep.
Mr. Muggs lived in a large cage near Jim Jones' cottage in Guyana and quickly became the Jonestown mascot. Various reports state that People's Temple's members admired the monkey. However, there are also rumors that Jones would order adult followers to place small children in Mr. Muggs' cages as a form of punishment. And that's not even a...
That's fucked.
Yeah. But let me get into this stuff a little bit more. So, their only son, Stephen, who I talked to you guys about when we were having a smoke break, attempted suicide at the age of 12 three different times. He also tried to eat daddy's medicine, his amphetamines.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
So, into Jones's drug-fueled times, as his congregation grew and became closer, Jones started replacing God with himself, even stating how he did miracles and the sky god didn't listen. He'd throw the Bible and dance on it wherever it landed, while the band would strike up and fuel the energy of the moment. So he would throw the Bible across the room and just start like,
and just a,
when
a
band Miles would, Davis,
and a band would start playing.
Yeah.
He's tap dancing all over the Bible.
Yeah. He's like, screw this thing, I'm your God, basically.
Well, and that for, you know, devout Christians or former devout Christians, that's like a big symbolic
thing. And it became a thing.
Yeah.
It was when they were like, wow, this guy's legit.
Because even me as like a former Christian reformer, recovering Christian reformer, I even hear about someone tap dancing on the Bible and even I go like, oh boy, that's some sputtin' if I ever heard it.
So, meanwhile, he's cussing and swearing and talking about socialism, but mixing it with the context of who his audience was. He had an ability to remain constant on people's names and their lives. Like I said, the cone of attention. He had a cone of attention for people that some famous politicians have that make them so successful. He even convinced people that we don't need to fear God, but in fact that he was God and was the savior. So it was like, don't fear God. I'm God.
We're cool. Let's do meth.
Yeah.
That's a great Tinder bio.
And basically between his miracles that he would perform with the chicken entrails and his plants that he would use in the audience.
Giant ferns.
It became easier to build the narrative, and even though his inner circle knew it was fake completely, and some would call him out, he used his ability to manipulate them by saying that it was for the greater good, the bigger church with more momentum. So basically, he was building things up to just get bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And even though there were lies involved, it was all for a greater good. Building to a larger thing was his dream, even testing the close ones by giving them Kool-Aid and saying, and this was early, we're talking 60s, mm-hmm. He would give them Kool-Aid and say, this is poison, drink it.
Oh, this is him testing the water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the Kool-Aid waters. This is
the 60s. Now,
let me just say,
the real shebang bang happens November 18th, 1978. This is the 60s.
Wow. So
he's already saying, drink this cup.
But he's at this point sponsored by Kool-Aid.
No, not necessarily.
He switches over to.
Right.
Right. But no, at the time, he was saying, like, Will you do this for me?
That's... Well, and at that time, if we go back to the stuff that I had talked about in the early to mid 60s, was at the same time he was doing all of that, you know, all that work on desegregation and racial integration. So like out of one side of his mouth, he's talking about, you know, all these great things about racial integration. And then also this now.
Right. That's... He had an inner circle that he would bring in and say,
which included a chimpanzee.
Yeah, Mr. Muggs is just off in the corner, like throwing shit at the wall. Yep. That's not a peanut butter sandwich.
Fuck. Mr. Muggs.
Somebody no. give Mr. Muggs a Benadryl because this is annoying as shit. But anyway, so he did these early poison sequences in the 60s, way before this even happened.
Okay, so he's telling him it's poison.
Yeah,
they drink it. It's not poison.
You want me to talk about happened after?
Yeah.
Then Ashton Kutcher comes out and says, you guys got punked.
Like, where does their trust go? Like, do you know? Like, how do you trust them?
No, you don't.
Because he's lying to you.
Mm-hmm. He would ridicule you to the point of crying,
what?
Falling over in a corner, and what then slowly pick you up and say, this was a test and you passed. Mm-hmm. And if you thought he was your leader, then to be picked up by your leader after he's told you you're a piece of shit and then caresses you and says, I love you and you're part of my congregation. I mean, it would be hard for you at the time, especially when you've been stripped to your core.
Yeah.
To just push that person away.
Mm-hmm.
So it was drug fueled time. And that's what builds up to when they get to Jonestown. It kind of, you know, you got to check each other's oil occasionally. And
as the cats are doing. This is a freaking zoo in here.
I know.
Three dogs, two cats.
Three cats.
A monkey.
Yep.
Mr. Muggs.
Mr. Muggs.
Mm-hmm.
I just imagine that monkey was just angry the whole time.
Oh, why wouldn't he be? He's locked in a cage and people keep throwing children in with him.
Well, yeah.
So, Mr. Muggs is just in the corner, sitting in a chair, smoking a cigarette, like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he
can't wait till his day ends.
More fucking kids, Jesus.
And a lot of them came. So, and it was then that he went after his, some would say, preacher adversary, Mother Divine, which April brought up.
Mm-hmm.
Mother and Father Divine. Socialist Church Avengers commence.
The Avengers.
He figured that in 5 or 6 days, he could dazzle her congregation enough to where he would bring them back. Now, the money that they raised on those churches that he set up in California, he bought a lot of Greyhound buses. So when they would leave, they would have extra spaces. Now,
fucking and pooping.
Whoops, wrong button.
Well, they could. They maybe I'm they sure got they down did to that
too.
So, anyway, and honestly, it worked in some ways, and I'll explain this. So, they'd be entrapped in Jones' rhetoric and his followers, and before you know it, they'd fill up his buses. That was kind of his deal.
Mm-hmm.
So, what ultimately did was Mother Divine's post. Mother Divine was post Father Divine. Father Divine died.
Oh,
so Jim Jones said let me explain this. Jim Jones had said his wife's body had swapped similar to the way Jones informed his inner circle of his fuck schedule, but basically saying mind manipulation.
Excuse me, can you check my fuck schedule for me?
Well, no, it was all about
what's my 2 o'clock.
So he couldn't have sex with Marceline because of her bad back. Mm-hmm. So it got switched to another woman.
That so his, he could wife, have sex. His wife was cool with this.
Yes.
So she,
think
she,
about this. He was supposedly like a Jesus Christ.
Aaron. Never mind.
She's about to fall asleep and I'm like, you're about to drop a nuclear bomb on her heart. Don't even like hypothetically drop that.
Why are you petting her?
I was patting her on her sweet hair. All right. So anyway, Jim Jones was a bad guy. Meanwhile,
I want a fuck schedule.
Do you think it's integrated into our phones now? Like the
nowadays
calendar?
It is, yeah.
I got a push notification for...
Hey, so basically, Siri, it's a, what's so, on my fuck schedule?
A thrust notification.
What?
Josh's 7 fuck schedule appointments. April, are you aware?
Oh my god!
That Siri gets right.
Oh my god! We're having a talk when we finish this episode.
It came up as Fox appointments.
I don't know if I
check mine.
Siri, what's my fuck schedule?
You have more than 24 upcoming appointments.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. I'm a player.
Hold on. I feel like if I do this to my phone, my phone's going to explode. I know. I want to keep my phone. Watch this at 0.
Hold on. Hey, Siri. What's my fuck schedule? Okay, hold on. What's my fuck schedule?
Sexist.
Oh my
god. It is. I mean, Ryan, at this point.
You have to now.
You have to. You have to check your fuck schedule.
What's my schedule?
You have more than 24 upcoming.
Oh.
So do I. We might be fucking each other 24 times. I'll bring the lube.
Oh my god.
Interesting. So he went after Mother Divine because Father Divine was died. He had died. He said that he had inherited Father Divine's spirit.
Okay.
So a flim flam artist will never give up their shtick.
No.
And basically she threw open her shirt, showed him his boobs, and said, go fuck yourself.
Wait, that's a mixed message.
Titties, titties, titties.
I guess there were some flat pancake nipples.
I mean, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, basically.
Okay. All right. Well.
So Jones left.
I will. Thanks.
To head back to their main place in Ukiah, California, a remote place he kept his followers. Now let's talk about the inner circle, which is the inner people that dealt with Jones.
Okay.
He used them and abused them. He had them box, like straight up box, in a ring, and sometimes naked. Also, sometimes a little boy against an old woman.
What? That's some...
Oh, my God.
What's that celebrity deathmatch
shit? No kidding.
If they had done Jim wrong, they'd be spanked publicly.
Ooh, go on.
Or made to be humiliated by the church until they collapse crying, and then he'd hug them and welcome them back, which is what I talked about with kind of his method of just like... Don't worry. Don't worry.
Don't worry that you just got your ass kicked. But
yes, I just kicked your ass.
One guy even got pissed and puked on.
Wow.
Some people pay good money for that.
Well, this is before that. So punishment and love were so mixed, it became a big deal to say how little sleep you got because you were so adamantly working for the socialist cause. So if somebody came up to you and was like, hey, man, I only slept 3 hours. And you're like, hey, fuck you, man. I only slept 2. You would be cooler. Mm-hmm. That was the way to be cool.
Sleeping less.
Yeah, because you were more awake for the father.
Shit, I would be the coolest.
No kidding.
Like 4 hours of sleep a night. Not for socialism. It's for my toddler.
Then there was the stigmata.
For a good cause.
Yeah.
The stigmata. He made his plants. Or those people that, mm-hmm. that were involved, he made them draw blood on their hands. And that wasn't just chicken entrails. That was cut your fingers, cut your toes, cut your
make real blood. Don't make me look like shit in front of my congregation.
Yeah.
I thought it was like the make your finger spell blood. Like,
so they did have their blood. They did have their own self-policing because they did have a child molester that eventually came into their group and they said, uh-oh, hey buddy, you're not gonna molest, right? And he was like, gouch honor, I'll never molest. And then 2 weeks later he molested a little boy. So this is what they did,
because he had a mustache, that
his name was like Chicken or Chester
the Chester,
something like that. And literally they took him into
the molester.
They took him into a room.
And that whole time he spent after the Cheetos thing, he really went downhill.
Once Chester got a hold of the meth, it's all downhill.
Chester the methster.
I'm not excited about this.
He wore sunglasses.
It's true.
So they took this guy. So this is what happens when you have a socialist group decide that they're going to do their own type of self-policing.
Right.
So this guy molested somebody when they told him not to. So they brought him into a room, a basement.
Okay.
No windows.
Yes.
They said, sit down, Chester. He said, okay.
Yes, okay. Sit down now.
He said, hey, Chester, can you take your small, little, thin, number two pencil penis and balls?
Thanks for complimenting the size of my genitalia.
And put this on a platform.
Okay, I'll do that.
All right.
Now what?
Now here comes our friend with a rubber hose. He's going to smash your testicles for the next hour.
Oh my god!
More!
Jumpy, jumpy, yo! Beep, beep!
This motherfucker!
Jumpy, jumpy, yo! Beep, beep!
Oh my god! When he showed up to the hospital after this happened,
jumpy, jumpy, yo! Beep, beep!
They literally thought he had elephantitis of the nuts.
I can't imagine getting your penis or your testicles whipped with a rubber hose for once.
Yeah.
I would die.
I would
just shoot myself in the fucking face.
Yeah. Like, how was he even standing to keep his dick on a platform?
You want to know what's crazy? Is he came right back to the church after that.
He's just going to stop after he came. He's one of those guys.
Yeah.
I don't know what you come after that. Just get into smoking weed at that point. All right.
For an hour.
Oh my god.
They probably look like two squashed grapes.
So in San Francisco, they opened those three spots that April brought up. So it's in San Francisco, he was super happy. Not for spanking somebody's balls with a rubber hose, but because he had three churches. I would say this is the happy time for him.
Oh, not for testicles.
No. But then he realized,
kiss someone's testicles goodnight.
Yeah, always kiss your balls goodnight. So mine don't smell bad, I promise.
God, no one was asking.
I appreciate the information.
That's for you, LP. In case you were wondering.
That was like a closet full of old books.
So what would you do? You have a packed congregation. You have people listening to you. Mm-hmm. You're self-policing. You're having sex. You're having sex with men and women.
Mm.
How would you drive the influence even more?
With a Mercedes.
You would do it by staging an assassination on yourself.
Really?
Oh,
which is what you did. He used it to fuel the fear in his group and the Messiah God nature that wanted his people to feel the Messiah God nature that he wanted his people to feel towards him. When it feels like your pastor is so involved in something that's like, I'm being attacked because of my views and my views are right. When somebody tries to hurt them, it's like, no, don't touch Jim, you know? So making enemies seem real to the church. That's when he had a private security formed at the time, which became more and more important for him. They were mean and they had guns, which is intense. I mean, you're going to church and then all of a sudden your pastor has guys who seem mean and have guns. It gave off an image, especially with a drugged up, passionate Sunglass Jones leading them. I mean, I'm just saying. It wasn't like Keanu Reeves. It was like, It was, I'm sorry.
Blow.
I'm trying really hard not to copy you.
Okay.
We got dueling
Keanu's.
A forest of Keanu's.
Yeah, there's a whole bushel of Keanu's.
Whoa. Aaron's falling asleep.
I know. I was like,
you have no idea. We, Aaron and I usually go to bed around 8:30. Is that what time we go to bed?
What? All right. We're going to finish, I promise.
We're there usually was an bed like 4 hours ago.
There was an 8-part article from the press that came out speaking against them, which only reinforced the idea that Jones was going to be attacked and made his followers more entrusted to him. Then came the Gang of Eight, who were well-intentioned members of the congregation.
When something starts as well-intentioned, you know what's going south.
Well, these were kids that had influence. They were part of the church, and they were also being... Jones was paying for them to go to college, but they also realized he was full of shit.
Oh, okay.
So these eight came back at him, and he let them go. Most people who left the church, he would just like ridicule them. But these people, he knew they had influence. So he was like, oh, no, it's okay. Just leave them alone. They can say what they want to say. And that's fine.
Interesting.
So he also got caught tapping his toe. He went to go see Dirty Harry at a local movie theater. He was like, I don't mind a little shit on my dick. So he went to go see Dirty Harry and walked into a bathroom. Saw another man's foot next to his, tapped his toe.
He did the old senator trick there.
And then that senator was also a cop.
Oh, shit.
The cop came out, walked into the stall, saw Jones with his dick in his hand, just trying to start his AR-15 real quick. And the cop ran away and said, you're under arrest. And after now listen to this. So this cop literally had him dead to rights because
he's got his dick in his hand,
walking towards him.
Towards the cop?
Yeah, like pulling on his
shit. Isn't that a deadly weapon?
No.
In my case, it is.
So this cop was, his literal job was to bust people, not gay, but just sexual activity.
Like in a men's
bathroom. For pay. Maybe. I don't know. You know what? I can't justify his actions, but I will say this. The cop, you know how when it comes to small claims court, like no one wants to show up. Cops definitely don't want to show up because usually you have to take time off.
If you challenge a speeding ticket, you can usually get away with it because the cop won't show up.
If you protest it, yes.
Yeah, you protest a speeding ticket.
This cop is required to show up on his off time.
Right.
And they usually won't.
No. Yep. And that's how you do that. This cop showed up 3 times.
Wow.
To protest this guy because he knew him dead to rights. Yeah. And the judge got him off. Not someone got him off. But he was like, we're throwing this out because it's bullshit. And meanwhile, the cop's standing there. He's like, he ran at me with his fucking dick in his goddamn hands. And I can't fucking.
Like a rhino in heat.
Exactly. And meanwhile, he's like, oh, it was nothing. And Jim Jones is like, I have an issue with my balls. So it just correlates that maybe I was, you know, just trying to jingle jangle my testicles in order to
with a rubber hose.
Yeah, well, that's the other guy.
Oh, okay. I'm getting my balls confused.
Anyway, I'm glad we talked about that because it was an interesting story for me. So you may wonder, with all behind the scenes stuff, bad press, and the Gang of Eight coming at him, mm-hmm. how did the world really see them? Well, the church was filled and growing, and on its face, they were doing good. In fact, a lot of the survivors and people side involved with the time would say they had fond memories of the People's Temple. Mm. You'd your perfect hub to show integration in San Francisco with black and white members mixing together. There was mostly white, if not all white, in the inner circle, truthfully.
Hmm.
And it looked like a perfect situation at the time. And Jones had support from so many politicians, celebrities from Rosalind Carter to Jane Fonda, from the mayor of the city to local officials. And it made the members feel great because they were shoulder to shoulder with highly members. High members of society. I mean, it's like if you're sitting there next to Jane Fonda and there's a black kid and an Asian kid, I mean, it feels like you're in a Reading Rainbow episode or fucking Sesame Street. I mean, basically, it just feels like it's not. I'm on Mr. Rogers or whatever. Thank you. And I promise this is the end of my rant. And then we're going to end this episode. So then comes Guyana? How do you say this?
Diana.
Guyana. Thank you, April. Hmm? You see, with the enemies he spoke of, the government, fake news, assassinations. Yeah. And such, Jones decided it was time to move to a place where he could have a so-called socialist paradise away from America.
Hmm.
And Guyana was a perfect place because at the time, they had established their independence from British hands, and as they had hardly an army to fend off enemies, the Venezuelans to the north had a huge army. But when Jim Jones sent word his intent to move, it basically became a shit show, because for Venezuela, it was like, okay, so you're telling me 1,000 Americans are moving to Guyana,
mm-hmm.
and we would very likely like to attack that, but also those are Americans and American armies are huge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It became the perfect mm-hmm. situation for basically those people to move there. So a ton of white and black Americans on their country became kind of a thing. And now initially it wasn't a big thing. It was a small group, but they were able to head that small group south. Also, the monkey included.
Of course.
Hell yeah.
Mr. Muggs. I throw shit where I want to. And they would soon establish a community called Jonestown.
Maybe like Niceburg.
Right. Or Herrigstown.
Herrigstown.
Herrigsville.
Shoopsville.
Mm-hmm. Before we end this episode, fun fact.
Oh, boy.
The pound of cyanide that was bought to kill these people.
A pound?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, what? That's it?
Just that was a pound? For this, a pound for the suicide punch they made. Do you know?
It sounds like it's either a wrestling move or a bar drink.
It cost $8.
Wow.
You can kill how many people?
No. That's a spoiler.
No. We'll get to the 918 people next episode.
A pound 13. Can kill that many people.
Oh, my God.
If not more.
It was a fun fact I thought I'd throw out there before that we get to the darkest.
Yeah. For eight whole U.S. American dollars, I can kill 1,000 people.
Not that I would.
I never thought you would.
It's good to know.
It's good to know that my friends don't think of me as a mass murdering psychopath.
It's comforting.
Yes.
Jim Jones he's one of the worst people I've ever covered because he wore his Mr. Rogers on his front, but behind it was
assless chaps.
He's like, well, if chaps had an ass, they'd just be pants.
And why is that a problem?
So, okay. So he's like a mullet. He's Mr. Rogers in the front. And
I would say
Billy Ray Cyrus in the back.
My achy, breaky heart.
Oh my God. He really is, though. He's very much a wolf in sheep's clothing. Like, the textbook definition of that is Jim Jones.
And I mean,
and he prided himself on it.
I brought up stuff tonight that we would cover that was, I mean, these are minuscule things like him being into gay sex and also he also used old people to take their money. That happens a lot. Like all these people, they were giving.
That's what people nowadays do. Your Pat Robertsons, your Benny Hinn's, your Joel Olds.
And people still fall for it, hook, line, and sinker.
I have family members who do.
It's good intention.
Yeah. So up to this point, honestly, he'd be okay. He's not as bad as a Joel Osteen at this point, but when we get into the next episode,
ramping up though.
There's a reason there's a part two.
When
we get to part two, he becomes Adolf Hitler. In my mind, I think he becomes just as bad. But anyway, check out our Patreon.
Yes.
Thank you for listening to us for 200 episodes. Thank you for sticking around.
This is insane. 200. Who would have thought we would still like each other?
Well, we'll always like each other, but when it comes to
scratch that. Love each other.
Yes. Absolutely.
All the time.
Can we do a quick round the horn and say, like, do you have a favorite moment from the past 200 episodes?
That's a great question.
I know it's hard to pinpoint just one. I don't know. Does anything come to mind?
Favorite moment
from the past 200 episodes.
200 episodes.
I guess everybody can just kind of spitball because that's easier, but I would say Titanic episode.
That was good.
Super silly and
who was our special guest was
Jen.
Give her whole name.
Chester.
Who is a
author.
So go check her stuff out. Give her some love. Give her some money.
Absolutely.
Buy her books.
I thought about this before I asked the question, but the most prominent thing that comes to mind, maybe because I sat and I watched it happen, was Larry leaning over in my rolly chair to record one of his farts, and then it just totally backfired and he went down so slow in that chair the way, because like it was the most instant karma after we like, oh my God, he's gonna record another fucking fart, and he leans over and I just it was so slow the way he went.
It was very slow and hit motion. The floor. And that's the thing is the farts I play are mostly they're mostly Josh and me, and there's a few from Brian. When Brian Isaac would come on to the Potty Slam show, but
Brian breaking the chair.
The whole Elf episode, but that specifically.
That specifically because our laughter
is real.
It's so
real.
Genuine, and I just love.
There's a piece of meat that got caught on a screw.
Was like, owie, owie, owie.
And I remember listening to this and thinking, like, when it happened, Josh is laughing and Larry's laughing. And, like, I'm like, are you okay? I'm the only one concerned. You guys are broing out over your friend getting hurt.
As far as we know, he took, like, a leg of a chair up the ass. We don't know.
I'm like, oh, my God, do you need to go to the hospital? Are you okay?
No, Josh and I are just laughing and laughing.
Oh, my God.
And then he gets mad because he's like, dude, you fucked up my chair. I'm like, Jesus.
Yeah, but remember, we had been playing chair roulette with that particular chair for
kind of fail on me a couple times itself.
Remember, the seat would like
it would just kind of just it would of, shift and yeah. like kind of pop out of place.
It was going to happen eventually.
It was.
Oh my god!
I would say JFK, obviously. I mean, as far as like important episodes,
for sure.
I was gonna go with JFK or OJ.
OJ was a really good one
because they both kind of birthed a character that has maintained. Another one was the slide whistle player.
Yep,
Which I don't know what the episode that was, but it's
Area 50, was it Area 51?
Maybe.
It was something older.
Yeah.
Maybe. Not sure.
Chemtrails.
Chemtrails is certainly in my mind.
The chemtrails exist.
As is the Kraken.
What's the episode we never put out?
The episode we never put out?
I think there's been two.
No, the one that we didn't put out is because we recorded it the year before.
No.
Remember we did
There are two episodes that we've recorded that we never put out.
One was recently.
One was recent.
During the COVID.
Was it a that might have been a Patreon show that we didn't put out.
Could have been. No, it was a full episode.
I'm telling you, it's because we recorded that full episode and then we checked afterward because it was around Easter. And it was like the something bunny or
Bunny Man we didn't release because we actually recorded it twice.
Yep.
That's one of them. Oh wow. Was that me?
No, that's me.
Your burp flapper is not broken.
There was one. It was from home. It was really early on that we never put out.
Oh, 2000 Betty White.
Not, but it wasn't that one either. So actually, we have more than two.
Yeah, there's a few. I have them. I don't erase anything.
No.
So I have everything we have ever done.
My bad.
No, well, I mean, look.
Step back from the Thunderbird for a second here.
There were some things when we first started that look, you were going through a thing
right
at the time, that's true. Honest.
Hard.
Yeah.
It was hard.
I can't imagine that.
Yeah.
Don't divorce Larry.
Thank you.
I'll try not to. Oh, jeez.
If that would have been on mic, it would have been perfect.
Hey, she said, good.
I'll try not to.
Oh, my God.
That was cute.
Now, last question I have for you guys.
Yes.
Would
we do this again? No.
No.
This is actually our farewell episode.
Yeah, no, it's
we'll
not.
See you
it's
never. no, concerning like the first bunch of episodes that you guys did, would you ever want to re-record those in the format that we have now? Because I know that Bigfoot is only like 15 minutes long.
Well, because
we'll do like an Elton Brown, like Reloaded. Reloaded.
You get better. Mm-hmm. The more you do this, so we're better. You're on board now.
Well, because like something, especially for Bigfoot, that was episode number one. I think there's a lot more content that could probably
especially
be crammed
you think
in
about
there.
How small that was, and I think there's a 5 minute clip in the beginning and a 12 minute clip in the middle, and it's like a 20 minute show.
Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah. I think it would be fun to revisit some of those.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the podcasts that I like. Namely last podcast they did that too and I think that would be smart because because we did literally our first four episodes are like Bigfoot, aliens, ghosts, vampires and it's like
they're the biggest topics.
So, we should go back in some capacity.
Yeah.
Bigfoot, I think, for sure. I don't know. Ghosts is pretty broad. We've covered paranormal stuff.
I would dictate ghosts to just paranormal things.
Honestly, I have a feeling of never go backwards, always go forward.
That's fair.
Of course.
That's fair, yeah.
That's a great way to think.
But maybe we could do a revisited on the Patreon.
Yeah, that would be fun.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. And you should join our Patreon at patreon.com/BeerCityMediaPodcast.
A lot of value for your bucks there.
Indeed.
You've got, of course, the other show, which we've done a couple times. We've got another show. We've got the list. You've got the EFIS. You've got
Beer City Spaceship.
What else is on there?
Body Slam.
Body Slam. Is Bud Miles up yet?
Nope.
So we've got other stuff coming like Bud Miles. We've got Stiff Joystick. We've got
Off Tempo
isn't up yet.
No,
come on,
getting there.
Josh, are you dying over there?
Mm-hmm. He's just slowly
very tired. I can tell
falling out of his own butthole.
Josh, have you given him the Off Tempo yet?
Yes.
Okay.
No, he hasn't.
I'm not sure. I have to look at my downloads.
And how much is the Patreon?
What,
$5 at the top.
So for less than a pound of cyanide.
Not wrong.
You can have access to all this content.
So kill 1,000 people or
listen to 1,000 episodes.
Yes.
It's the logical choice, folks.
I think off tempo has to go up next.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's my vote.
Yep.
I love that. I love that.
That's a great concept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And well, thanks.
Way to have a family and be like out of time to do things like.
This was the hopeful episode. So
next episode, we're going to break your hearts.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Crucially.
Right. Mm-hmm. We're used to it.
Does anybody have anything they want to throw out there before we end this bad bear?
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. There's a cat.
Okay.
I was just pushing through things and that popped up.
All right.
Do I have any Josh stuff here? I haven't done a Josh thing in a while.
Yeah, play some Josh stuff on the soundboard.
Mm-hmm. Here's Ryan.
My bad.
Ryan. It was like 9 pages of Ryan. An April page. Oh, here we go.
Fuck off. Fuck off. Fuck off. Species. Casamimi.
I'm going to keep this brief.
Nolan Ryland.
Blue.
Blood plugs for everybody.
Can you send that to me so I can make that the ringtone on my phone? Oh, Josh is calling.
That is one of the best things I've heard.
What was that? That's just...
All right.
The cat purrs on loop. I didn't even know. I was like, how do I stop the cat purr? Oh, well, I don't.
All right.
We'll see you next week.
It's now 5th of July.
It's the 5th of July.
This episode took a day.
My bad. I'm ending it. Right.
No. I'm just saying. It took a day.
It did.
It was the 4th.
How much we love you guys.
It's now the 5th.
Mm-hmm. And Aaron is out cold.
Josh is...
He's out.
We'll see you next week on another episode of the Conspiracy Therapy Podcast. Have a great night, guys.
People are running scared tonight. The cows are coming home. They cling together, terrified, afraid to be alone. The bees are buzzing around their queen, waiting.
This has been a presentation of Beer City Media.